So it'll be my privilege at this time to introduce Brother Clough. Dr. Richard B. Clough currently serves as a faculty member at BYU-Idaho in the psychology department. He received his bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Utah. He earned his master's and doctorate degrees in clinical psychology from Florida State University. Dr. Clough went on to complete postdoctoral work in clinical neuropsychology from Dwight D. Eisenhower Veterans Administration Medical Center in Leavenworth, Kansas. As a clinical psychologist, Dr. Clough has worked in various venues, including testing and assessment, as a university professor, and in the State Psychiatric Hospital in Thomasville, Georgia. He's also worked at Kaiser Permanente Medical Center in Los Angeles, California, and in the VA Medical Center in Leavenworth, Kansas. While living in St. Joseph, Missouri, Dr. Clough worked at the state criminal justice system, the state vocational rehabilitation, and in his own private practice. Brother Clough has served in a variety of positions in the church, from nursery leader to home teacher, Sunday school teacher, elders' quorum president, varsity scout coach, bishop, and state mission presidency, and in bishoprics, and an example to us of service and blessing the lives of many of our church members. He enjoys being with his family. He also enjoys flying, fishing. I wanted to say fly fishing, but photography and poetry. Brother Clough and his wife are the parents of four children, and they currently have one grandson who is 2 weeks old. So we congratulate them on their entry into that period of time in their life. We're grateful for the opportunity of having Brother Clough speak to us today. And we'll have a question and answer session afterwards. And after Brother Clough finishes, I'll give you a few directions on our question and answers. Brother Clough.
An introduction like that tends to make one feel old, especially now that I'm a grandfather. Upon hearing this, my wife suggested to me that perhaps one of my best accomplishments was when I was a tree in her roadshow in the ward. I had no speaking lines in that role. I would like to begin by expressing appreciation to the forum committee, President Broadhead, Larry Thurgood, my colleagues and my good friends, all of whom have shown me, my wife, my sweetheart, Anne, and I great kindness this day. So to you, thank you. Also the support staff who have helped me with this presentation. I have already learned a great deal simply through the process of being asked to take part in this forum and all that that entails. I hope you will enjoy our experience together here today. I request your faith and prayers to be joined with mine, inviting the Spirit that all may be edified and find value in this hour that we discuss on the topic of gambling. Since your time is as valuable as anyone else's, let's jump right to the heart of today's discussion. I've limited our discussion today to games of chance, since the majority of all gambling revenues come from this class of gambling. Acknowledging that there are differences between what are referred to as games of chance and games of skill, many of the same principles we'll discuss today will nonetheless apply to both. According to national studies, more than 50% of the population plays the lottery. More than 33% frequent casinos on a regular basis. Depending upon the state surveyed and public access to gambling sites, it's estimated that between 74 and 90% have gambled at some time in their lifetime. One survey reports that 84% of respondents believe that casino gambling is acceptable for themselves or others. And in a national survey, 75% of Americans who attend religious services at least once a week considered casino gambling to be an acceptable form of entertainment. As stated by Timothy L. O'Brien in his book, Bad Bet, quote, gambling is now more popular in America than baseball, the movies, and Disneyland combined, end quote. Given these statistics, it's likely that many of you in this room today have had some experience with gambling, or at least know someone who has. Excuse me. Over the years, I've used the example of gambling in my general psychology classes to summarize the principles of learning and learning theory. I do this because I know of no more masterful application of psychological principles and behavioral research than that used by casinos and those involved in promoting gambling. As experts in employing these principles to their desired ends, they certainly qualify among those whom the Lord expressly warned us against in section 89, verse 4 of the Doctrine and Covenants. Quote, "Behold, verily, thus saith the Lord unto you, in consequence of evils and designs which do and will exist in the hearts of conspiring men in the last days, I have warned you and forewarn you." Unquote. My purpose today is to uncover some of these designs by looking at the reasons people gamble and then consider the consequences of these choices. The following is a list of the most common reasons researchers and thousands of my previous students have provided as to why a person might gamble. So let's begin with the first one. To make money. According to a survey conducted by the National Gambling Impact Study Commission, as many as 78% of respondents admitted that the reason they gamble is for the money. Let's look at this reason. Is it possible to make money in the short run in games of chance? Yes, it is, but only if two conditions hold. First, you have to be the lucky one out of some 134 million people. Given those odds, you are more likely to be struck by lightning, killed by a terrorist, or die from flesh-eating bacteria. In other words, not very likely. Although I may have just given some of you something else to worry about. Okay, second, you have to stop gambling and never, ever, 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 ever gamble again. But what happens as soon as someone wins? You've seen them at the gas station when someone wins a $10 prize on a scratch and play card. Immediately they purchase 10 more tickets, scratch them off, and throw them away. Is it possible to make money at games of chance in the long run? No. Period. To understand why, let's suppose you had a vat full of equal amounts of red and white and blue marbles. With the help of Brother Craig Johnson from the math department, I employed a random number generator to randomly draw marbles from the vat to demonstrate this principle. Suppose a white marble represented a win. Since you have 1/3 of each color, your odds, of course, of winning are 1 in 3 or 33%. However, with each successive draw from the large vat, your odds of pulling out a white marble or multiple white marbles in a row significantly reduces with each succeeding draw, such that the more times you draw, i.e. the more times you gamble, the more your pile of marbles will begin to look like the pile that you are drawing from. The more times you gamble, the more your wins and losses have to look like the system that is built into the game. You cannot escape it. Since you cannot make money in the long run, why then do people continue to gamble? Curiosity is frequently the motivation for first-time players. Suppose you are on a layover in Las Vegas Airport and happen to have four quarters in your pocket. Now, you shouldn't do this, but perhaps in a moment of weakness, you decide to place a quarter in the slot machine. You pull the handle, the wheels spin, the lights flash, clinking sounds peel out periodically, and the wheels come to rest, seven bars. You place another quarter in, bars, and cherries. Your third quarter, bars, cherries. Of course, unbeknownst to you, these doubles are built into the system to make it look like you were just that close to a jackpot. Last quarter, bars. Bells ring, the machine shakes, and your tray fills up with quarters. Now, of course, you're not going to put those newly obtained quarters back into the same machine. So you gather up your rewards and find a machine that others have been playing for a while without a return or a win. That machine will only hold so much, so it's due for a win right now, right? So off you go. You get the rest of your, you go through half of your winnings. You have another, you hit another jackpot, and off you go looking for the next machine that has not paid out recently. Never mind that you've missed your connecting flight. You're making money, right? Okay, 3 hours later, you're down to your last quarter again. You pull the arm, the wheel spin, and stop, sevens, sevens, and bars. You had a bucket full of quarters, and now you have none. You look around and see a man who's been watching you feed this machine all of your quarters, all of your winnings. What do? Out comes your credit card, and you're hooked. As this example demonstrates, the subtlety is that people forget the machines do not keep track of your individual investments. They're only set up to guarantee that the overall intake exceeds the overall outcome. Casinos advertise returns on some of their machines to be as high as 90 and 95%. What these figures mean is that the machines are designed so that over time, they will take in, that means you will lose, 5 to 10% more than the machine ever awards out in a jackpot, regardless of how big that jackpot is. This is why casinos never lose. Unfortunately, and by design of the advertisements, people therefore assume they will eventually receive back their 95% investment. According to a recent study, in actuality, the average return from any machine is 60 to 70%, and the average return for an evening of play is as low as 40%. Why is that? First, because of the same reason we discussed previously. Players reinvest their winnings. If a player continues to reinvest their 95% winnings again at a 5% loss each time, over and over, the return theoretically will eventually be zero. As we demonstrated with the marbles, the system and the odds are guaranteed. The more your pile of marbles, the more you play, the more your pile of marbles, that is, your wins to losses, will look like the system you are playing. Second, what most do not understand is this 95% is a global, not individual return. Since everyone, once in a while, someone wins a big jackpot, this means that this person received a significant portion of your 95% return, which means your individual return cannot be 95%. So many continue to gamble expecting that promised 95% return. When in reality someone else has already taken it while the casino is taking your money to pay for it. On the other hand, the unfortunate winner now believes that he or she can win more than they put in. So they continue to play, looking for another win. Also, as illustrated in the airport example, casinos capitalize on a social psychological principle called the gambler's fallacy, which is a common error in thinking. Most people, gamblers included, understand that you have an equal chance of winning regardless of which machine you play. After all, they are all set to reward that 95% of 100, right? Yet, as demonstrated in our airport example, when all the quarters have been placed in the machine and someone else has watched you do that, most people will now claim that the chances of winning on that particular machine are higher because it has been a long while since it has paid out. That is the gambler's fallacy. For example, if we toss a coin and we have five tosses, and this is the what comes out, we have tails, heads, and three more tails. Well, by show of hands, if you all were to guess what the next toss would be, how many of you would say tails by raise of hands? A few of you. How many would say heads? Many more. That's the gambler's fallacy. This error in thinking contributes to the compulsive gambler's belief that after a string of losses, they are now even more likely to win. So they continue, sometimes with even more determination, to chase their losses by making even larger bets, convinced now that a win is inevitable, and a larger bet will save them when the win comes. The reality, of course, is that the odds are always the same, regardless of what the history of the machine has been. With technological advances, VLTs, or what we call video lottery terminals, sometimes called the fast food version of gambling or the crack cocaine of gambling, have replaced many slot machines, increasing the addictive power of the gambler's fallacy. VLTs look like slot machines, but they are networked to a central computer. Thus, the computer, not the individual machine, determines where and when and which machines the network will deliver the 95% return. In this system, the 95% return is not limited to a specific machine. It is shared with as many machines as are connected to the network. Another social psychological concept casinos capitalize on is the availability heuristic, which states that remembered events tend to be perceived as being more frequent. Thus, small bets are not remembered as they gradually add up, but a large win is. Because the win is easily recalled, it leads to the belief that another win will soon be coming. This is a pattern common that we see in compulsive gamblers. Most compulsive gamblers experienced a big win early in their history, which convinces them that it will happen again. I suspect that most of you have seen these full-page ads taken out by casinos showing one of these lucky winners holding the $10,000 winner's check, right, the size of a filing cabinet. These ads are designed to be memorable in hopes that you will begin to believe that they are more frequent. When was the last time you saw a full ad listing of the 100,000 people's losses that contributed to that check? We don't see those. Casino owners and gambling proponents have invested a great deal in behavioral research. They've become experts, what I would refer to as the Jedi Masters, at employing these principles of manipulation upon their patrons. Lights, sounds, actions, smells, shows, all are by design. These are the lure, the bait, if you will, inexpensive prime rib and lodging, lights and excitement, live bands which play loud at night to keep you awake, and less so with the rising of the sun, lighting that's not too bright lest it fatigue your eyes, attractive attendance, and it goes on. In the 1990s, Las Vegas invested hundreds of millions of dollars to market a new image, to change from their image of Sin City to one of being a family-friendly resort with casinos building amusement parks and theme parks to babysit their children while the parents are gambling. The effect is to make it as attractive, convenient, and as exciting as possible. Slot machines are not randomly dispersed throughout the casino, but instead, they're methodically crowded together, taking advantage of the findings of psychologist Albert Bandura and vicarious reinforcement. When one machine delivers a jackpot, everyone around the winner gets excited. Now think about that. Why is everybody else excited? What did they win? As we have already demonstrated, research shows that the longer a person plays, the more he or she will lose. As one report revealed, quote, casinos do not have to try to pull more money out of you. They only have to help you play longer, end quote. This is why there are no windows, clocks, or watches, and why some have wall and ceiling paintings of daylight scenery to paralyze your perception of time passing and slipping away. Casino interior designs have been changed based upon this research. Casinos create slot machine mazes, intentionally crafted so that it requires more time to navigate around and through the building, thereby exposing you to more stimuli in hopes of tempting you to continue your play longer. Neurologist Alan Hirsch researched various aromas until he discovered one most people find most appealing. Studies showed that when his aroma was released around slot machines, there was a 45% increase of revenue because the players continued playing longer. Back supports on slot machine stools designed to prevent circulation problems. Fresh air pumped in every 8 or few minutes to keep players alert and reduce drowsiness. Hand-pull slot machines now are replaced with push-button computer simulators, allowing more plays per hour. These same machines now accept both currency and credit cards, eliminating the time necessary to create change. Dealers are instructed to return chips of the lowest denomination because research shows players are more likely to hold on to the high denomination chips and spin the low denomination chips because they're more difficult to track. The memory of losing a dollar chip does not remain like the memory of losing a $100 chip. Colors have been researched. Bright colors draw people in, but softer hues keep people playing longer. So casinos place their brightly colored machines far down a row of machines to bring you in, and then they place the softer colored ones next to them. This way, there's less time spent in what the research calls transitional periods, where players move from one to locate a different machine. Some slot machines are intentionally designed to show the symbols just before and after where the reel itself stops, called the payout line. Then computer programs are designed to make multiple symbols come up in pairs, in our example, more often to make you think you were just one space away from a jackpot, when in reality you were no closer than any other spin. Manufacturers create machines where the first two reels have more winning symbols, whereas the last reel has only one. This way, it's more likely you will obtain pairs of symbols in the first two reels, again, creating the impression that you are very close. These are what they refer to in the business as near misses or heart stoppers. Using the social psychological concept of availability heuristic, slot machines, machine manufacturers create the winning symbols of the reels to be more distinctive by making them of a different quality, larger size, and flashing. This way, you will be more aware of the winning symbols when they appear, and therefore more likely to remember them over the less distinctive losing symbols, giving you the false impression that winning symbols appear more often, and that your chances of winning, therefore, are better. With advances in technology, slot machine producers have added stop buttons that deceive the player into thinking they can control where the wheels stop, creating the impression that they can increase their chances of winning. What they're not told is that the stop buttons actually speed to the end of the machine predetermined spin. Pushing the button does nothing to change the outcome. However, it does shorten the time it takes the machine to finish its cycle, which means you can play more plays in an hour, thereby increasing the amount you play and lose. Additional technologies that have been added to casinos are the radio frequency ID cards. These serve like credit cards so that you do not have to waste time exchanging cash. Research revealed that cardholders averaged $101 in losses compared to $31 for those who did not use them. The card is swiped at any game location, and then information about what type of games you play, how much you bet, and how often you bet is recorded. Information about when you break for a meal is also sent to the computers, as well as your meal selection. The information from these cards is then used to give 10 to 30% of the player's losses back in complimentary awards. Of course, for the specific type of games you've been playing most, the type of meal you most often order, or the type of show you prefer in order to attract you to return and play again, and cause you to feel happy in the midst of your losses. Studies also reveal that more money is spent when customers stay at the same location as the casino, so complimentary stays are also awarded. Of course, alcoholic beverages are free if state laws permit free drinks. If state laws do not permit free alcoholic beverages, the glasses are overfilled. Out of generosity? Okay. Some people report that they gamble for the social interaction. However, what you are sold on TV is not what I witnessed in person, as I have had to walk through these casinos to reach professional conferences held in their convention auditoriums. The fact that we had to walk through the casino to get to their auditoriums is, of course, by design, just as you have to walk through them to gain access to their restaurants and other offerings. On these occasions, I saw mostly solitary people at machines or tables. When there was more than one person in close proximity, there was very little social interaction as all were intent on the bet. I suspect a lonely person could wander and try to start a conversation with dealers and pit bosses, but as a U.S. News and World Report article revealed, employees refer to these talkative patrons as fleas, thus revealing the real depth of these supposed relationships. While the facade of nice people is important to present, dealers are under pressure to deal upwards of 75 hands an hour. The article goes on to quote the Las Vegas World Casino owner, Bob Stupak, as saying, quote, "They better deal as fast as they can, or they're going to work someplace else," end quote. I suppose you might meet someone other than an employee at these locations, but if you listen to President Clark's recent devotional address last month about likes attracting, it's a pretty good bet that the odds of finding your eternal temple-worthy husband or wife here are worse than your odds of winning their biggest jackpot. If you came with a social group, accounts indicate that most groups, with perhaps the exception of couples, when they arrive tend to separate to different locations and games within the casino. This is because personal finances are very private. Have you ever noticed that when anyone talks to you about gambling, it is usually about their winnings? When was the last time you heard someone tell you that they went gambling and lost $1,000? I imagine that your most likely response would be to question the gambler's wisdom. So, to protect themselves, most gamblers keep their losses secret. In actuality, having people watching you play can be detrimental. Studies show that most people tend to make higher risk bets when others are watching them than when they're alone. If people at the table are making large bets, you are more likely to feel pressure to do the same. If you win, others perceive you in a positive light, whereas if you lose, well, you lose. Research on problem gamblers supports this perspective, revealing that they prefer to gamble alone. Interestingly, research also indicates that women are more likely to gamble alone and to spend that time with machines as opposed to games of skill. Somehow, the company of a machine does not seem to me to fit the argument that gambling is for social interaction. Of course, with the increase of the internet gambling problem, the argument of gaming for social reward seems to be even less likely. Let's discuss entertainment. Approximately 30 to 40% of respondents report that the reason they gamble is for the entertainment. Indeed, a Los Angeles Times writer, Paul Brownstein, is quoted as saying, quote, "Gambling is fun. A horribly self-destructive activity if it gets out of control, yes. But in the meantime, fun. Fun, fun, fun," end quote. A vocal proponent of gambling, Frank Fahrenkamp Jr., writes, quote, "While the busybodies of the world continue their fight, we too will continue to defend the rights of our customers who enjoy the entertainment options we offer. It's clear that most people agree that gambling is fun, and that's my final answer," end quote. Let's look at that argument. First, if entertainment was what these games were about, then the least expensive way to play them would be to make the smallest bets, right? And play the least expensive machines. Since it is all the same game, why would anyone bet big money if it was not about the money? Second, as Michael Walker points out in his paper entitled "The Medicalization of Gambling as an Addiction," he says, if entertainment, not money, really is the primary motivation for involvement in these games, what would happen if these machines no longer periodically gave money in return? Would these same people really continue to gamble? Think about these games this way. Take away the money, and these games are really very boring. Can you imagine sitting in front of these games and sitting in front of these machines hour after hour to watch some cymbaled wheel spinning around just to see if they'll match up? Or a marble rolling around a table to see if it will fall on a number that you predicted? Frankly, I don't even think my grandson would spend his time watching these games more than once or twice. Since the longer you play, the less money you will make, and since people do not want to admit to wasting their money this way, it is human nature to find a more logical rationale for losing their money and wasting their time. Entertainment is the most widely employed excuse. Next, to win. Suppose you walk out to your car after this form and discover something green blowing beneath your wheel. You pull it out and you discover it to be a $100 bill. Suppose you are also heading toward Fort Hall to spend some time with a friend. Suppose further that you are not a member of the church and know nothing about gambling except that you always thought the roulette table looked fun in the Western movies, so you decide to give it a try. Okay, now do you place your entire $100 bill on one number to win, or do you make 100 single-dollar bets? Okay, so by raise of hands again. How many of you would place the full $100 bill on one number to win? How many would do that? Okay. How many of you would make the 100 single-dollar bets? Hands up. Most of the audience. Okay. What does the house want you to do? They want you, you would make wonderful patrons at the casino. They want you to make the 100 single-dollar bets. Why? Because the casino wants you to win. They are desperate for you to win. They want you to win so bad their teeth ache. The win is the hook. Remember, they are in this for the long haul. It is through the continued play that they get your money. Let's look at the odds of your bets. Roulette wheels have 38 number positions into which the marble may fall. If you bet $100 on one number, your odds are going to be 1 in 38. If you win, the house will pay you $3,600. It is here in the payout that the house also is skimming money from you and guaranteeing that they will always win and come out ahead. You take a 1 in 38 risk, and the house only pays you back at a rate of 1 in 36. Instead of paying you $38 for your risk, they only pay you $36. Now, if you lose, you're going to experience an awakening. Just moments ago, you had $100. You watched a silly marble roll around on a tabletop, drop down into a groove, and now you are $100 poorer than you were moments ago. After that, why would anybody gamble again? The house does not want you to have that experience. Now let's look at the bet most of the rest of you made. When you make your 100 single-dollar bets, the casino can pretty much guarantee that you will win at least two times. Since your odds of guessing right are 1 in 38, close to every 38 bets, you will guess right once. Since 38 goes into 100 twice, it is probable that you'll have at least two wins. That will be exciting because they will pay you $36 for your $1 bet. After you have placed your 100 single-dollar bets, you will now have $72. Isn't that exciting? Now let's look at your odds. What has to happen in order for you to win the same $3,600? By placing your single-dollar bets on one chance to win, your odds were 138. To end up with the same amount of money at 100 single-dollar bets, you have to select the correct number for that marble 100 times in a row. Do you have any idea what those odds are? I'll show you. Now that is what I call a bailout. Is it any wonder they want you to play more? Some people claim that they gamble for the rush or the excitement. There is this element. If I were about to lose $100 because a marble looked like it was going to stop in any of 37 different places I did not choose, I might feel a little emotion. Let's look at addiction, lastly. Studies indicate that approximately 3 to 5% of the population are problem or compulsive gamblers, with higher percentages among adolescent and college populations, as high as 8%. Although this may not look like very much, these numbers are similar to the prevalence of cancer and 5 times the rate of schizophrenia. Casinos employ what psychologists refer to as a variable racial schedule of reinforcement in their slot machines and other games of chance. A variable ratio means that the ratio of plays to wins constantly changes. This is the most addictive schedule of reinforcement known in the field of psychology. It is selected by design. Using this type of reinforcement schedule, psychologists have been able to get rats to press a bar to exhaustion. If you think about it, how many of you would play a dollar slot machine that took your money 9 times and then on the 10th play gave you back $9? But change the system to a variable ratio schedule of reinforcement and everyone will play them. Of course, the resulting debt means fewer family expenditures, bills that are overdue, utilities shut off, repossession, eviction, possible foreclosure, spouses harassed by bill collectors, insomnia, depression, anxiety, lost employment, embezzlement, fraud, theft, felony, divorce, and lost families. Studies indicate that of pathological gamblers, 18 to 28% of males and 8% of females declare bankruptcy. 57% report having stolen from others. 30-40% have embezzled from their employer. 63% have written bad checks. 23% had affairs. 35% divorced. And 13-18% have attempted suicide. Having discussed the logic behind gambling, let's spend the remainder of our time looking at what prophets and apostles have said on this subject. Since the word gambling does not explicitly show up in the Ten Commandments, or for that matter in any of the standard works, perhaps many people, Mormons included, have assumed or rationalized that it is fair game. Numerous presidents of the church have spoken out against gambling. President Heber J. Grant and his counselors in the First Presidency issued the following statement to the church on this subject back in 1926. Quote, "The church has been and now is unalterably opposed to gambling in any form whatever. It is opposed to any game of chance, occupation, or so-called business which takes money from the person who may be possessed of it without giving value received in return. It is opposed to all practices, the tendency of which is to encourage the spirit of reckless speculation and particularly to that which tends to degrade or weaken the high moral standard which members of the church and our community at large have always maintained. From our discussion today, it should be clear that ultimately gambling is about getting money. Regardless of the other reasons people give, if they are honest, money is the common denominator. Gambling is the manifestation of a selfish spirit. Gamblers seek what they have not earned. It is in complete opposition to the principles and doctrine of the gospel of Jesus Christ. President Joseph F. Smith stated, quote, that the desire to get something of value for nothing or for little or nothing is pernicious. President Stephen L. Richards underscores the same sentiment, explaining that it, quote, proceeds upon the assumption that one has to lose for another to gain. Said President Spencer W. Kimball, we call upon all the members of this church to be honest, full of integrity, pay for what they get, take only that which they have properly paid for. We must teach our children honor and integrity, end quote. The concepts and principles that are subtly sold through gambling are fatally destructive and always undermine the character and purposes of true disciples of the Savior Jesus Christ. Elder Dallin H. Oaks, a champion in the war against gambling, has frequently spoken out against the temporal and spiritual destruction that follows those who fall victim to the false promises of this activity. He teaches, quote, whenever we as Latter-day Saints engage in any any kind of conduct that is inconsistent with the companionship of the Spirit of the Lord, we pay an enormous price. He continues, it is an extraordinary waste of time, and that those who while away their hours gambling frequently do so to the neglect of family and work, end quote. Elder John A. Witzel of the Council of the Twelve gave vivid expression to this thought. He said, quote, they who gamble, who walk with chance, suffer degeneration of character. They become spiritually flabby. They end as enemies of a wholesome society. A gambling den, however beautifully housed, is the ugliest place on earth. After an afternoon or evening at card playing, nothing has been changed. No new knowledge, thoughts, or visions have come. No new hopes or aspirations have been generated, except for another opportunity to waste precious hours. It leads nowhere. It is a dead-end road. Dull and deadly is a life which does not seek to immerse itself in the rapidly moving stream of new and increasing knowledge and power. Time is required to keep up with the times. We dare not waste time on pastimes that starve the soul, end quote. Spencer W. Kimball indicated that even a small payoff is counter to the spirit of the work ethic. The size of the prize is irrelevant. Even if the gambler breaks even, the deterioration and damage comes to the person. Whether he wins or loses, to get something for nothing, something without effort, something without paying the full price. Quoting an editorial in USA Today, President Gordon B. Hinckley said, "The overwhelming majority of players always lose. The game takes bread and money from the poor, and it is one more temptation for the compulsive gamblers who ruin careers and families with their addiction." More recently, in his 2005 address on gambling, President Hinckley pled, quote, "Please, please do not fritter away your time or your talents in an aimless pursuit. If you do so, it will lessen your capacity to do worthwhile things. I believe it will dull your sensitivity to your studies in school. It will disappoint your parents. And as the years pass and you look back, you will be disappointed with yourself," end quote. In an attempt to counter these moral issues, many argue that the money from gambling is used to support charities and good causes, such as the use of gambling tax revenues to build bridges, repair roads, provide jobs, and build infrastructure. Somehow, I cannot seem to bring myself to believe that people who go to casinos are thinking, "I'm making this bet so that I can improve the streets or support the local food bank." The reality is that very little of gambling revenue actually goes to either state taxes or charities, or even to pay employees. The majority of winnings go to the owners of the casinos. It would seem to me that if one really wanted to donate to a charity, you'd want your entire contribution to go to the cause, not just 5, 20, 30% of it. Just imagine, as President Kimball stated, what would $30 billion a year do to help starving people? President Joseph S. Smith and his counselors in a statement of the First Presidency to the Church stated, "Let it not be thought that raffling articles of value, offering prizes to the winners in guessing contests, the use of machines of chance, or any other device of the kind is to be allowed or excused because the money so obtained is to be used for a good purpose. The Church is not to be supported in any degree by means obtained through gambling. Whatever may be the condition elsewhere, this custom is not to be sanctioned within this church, and any organization allowing such is in opposition to the counsel and instruction of the general authorities of the church," end quote. President Brigham Young once said to Sister Eliza Snow, "Tell the sisters not to raffle. If the mothers raffle, the children will gamble. Raffling is gambling." Then he added, "Some say, what shall we do? We have quilts on hand. We cannot sell them. And we need means to supply our treasury, which we can obtain by raffling for the benefit of the poor." President Young said, "Rather let the quilts rot on the shelves than adopt the old adage, the end will sanctify the means." As Latter-day Saints, we cannot afford to sacrifice moral principle to financial gain. Brothers and sisters, let's just say that by chance you were one of the lucky 1 in 35 million to win. When you leave the casino, whose money is in your pockets? We've clearly learned that it is not the casinos. They never lose. That money in your pocket is the money from the guy who just lost his paycheck, now has to go home and tell his wife that they do not have any money to purchase food for his family or pay their monthly bills. It is the money from the person who, because he has lost his paycheck, has maxed out his credit cards. It is the money from the person who, because he has lost his paycheck and maxed out his credit cards, that he now defrauds his employer or writes bad checks. The money in your pocket is the money from the person who, because he has broken the law and now is under investigation, that his wife and children leave him. The money in your pocket is the money from the person who, because he has lost his employment, wife and family, and is about to go to jail, goes home and takes his own life. That's whose money is in your pocket. Is it any wonder, then, that the church does not accept tithing on this kind of money? What good can you do with that kind of money? To all of you here today, I say, all forms of gambling are destructive. It is contrary to the character of the Savior. It is contrary to the covenants of temple worship. Win or lose, it will leave you and your loved ones spiritually bankrupt. Of this I testify, in the name of Jesus Christ, amen.